Hello, everyone. I'm Robbie Norman, and this is The Serial Fanaticist, the podcast for fans of everything. Welcome. Today, I am joined by Paige Lavoie to discuss the young adult fantasy novel, The Cruel Prince, by Holly Black. We talk about the differences between high and low fantasy, the setting of the Fae Realm, and our reactions to the dark tone of the story. The novel is very well written, and it was a good time talking about it with Paige, as always. On to the discussion! Hello, everyone. I'm here with Paige Lavoie for more blabbing about books.
Woo woo!
Woo woo. Paige, how are you?
I'm good. I'm excited to talk about this one.
Yeah, it'll be fun. It'll be fun time. We are talking about The Cruel Prince by Holly Black, book one of the Folk of the Air series. I believe book two literally like came out like what, this January, past January.
Yeah. And then there's a third. Doesn't come out until next July, Queen of Nothing, which I'm like, I haven't even read the second one yet. And I'm like, what does that mean? What?
I don't even want to hazard a guess, honestly, because my guess is like, I'm probably wrong. The Cruel Prince is a YA fantasy, correct?
Yeah. Okay. I think high fantasy, right? Okay.
There's magic in it and there's fairy creatures, so I'm assuming it's high fantasy. You know, low fantasy is normally like, hey, there's humans mostly, and maybe like a troll or a dragon.
One single troll. Any more than one troll.
That's not
getting into middle fantasy.
Mid fantasy. That's a strange thing that I have never heard the term middle fantasy, even though
no, me neither.
You'd think that would make sense because there is low and then there is high. You'd think there's room in the middle somewhere.
It sounds something. Like we're starting a genre.
It's a
book about literally just two trolls and a bunch of humans.
That's actually a really good idea. It's a buddy comedy with two trolls in a world that they feel isolated. Let's see. The Cruel Prince. We are, I think I'm noticing a trend in all the books we're reading, Paige.
Okay. We love murder.
They love murder. There is so much murder. So much. Christmas Joyride is the lone...
I don't know. I don't know if you read the epilogue there.
Oh, but, no. The lone exception. I didn't know what to expect, honestly. I don't read a bunch of fantasy to begin with. I read some, not a lot, not enough. I would not call myself like a fantasy expert or a well read.
Honestly, me neither.
Have you read any other YA fantasy?
Oh God. Not recently. No.
Okay.
You know what? Yes, that's a lie. I read Shadow Song. Was that? I'm looking on my bookshelf right now, and I'm just like, what?
Please, bookshelf, tell me.
Yeah, bookshelf. I don't see it up there. You know what? I'm pretty sure it's called Shadow Song. It's like a labyrinth retelling.
It's part of the Winter Song series?
Yes. And maybe it was Winter Song, and the second one is Shadow Song, and I haven't read the second one yet. Winter Song, yep.
Okay.
And that is also goblins and fairies and creatures, so... not really similar in the world building. This was definitely, I feel like, a deeper dive, but both of them kind of still had some, I don't know, similar in the descriptions of like the fancy dresses and the food and stuff like that, you know?
Right.
The fantasy stuff, where everyone is just eating bread and honey and berries and weird teas. That's how you know you're in a fantasy novel.
You're like that. That sounds like they just made tea out of branches. That doesn't sound very good. I haven't read a lot of fantasy. I just read some, mostly like the giant. Yeah, I've read Tolkien and George R. R. Martin. So those are that's what I've got to compare this to. I mean, I'm familiar with the Fey realm mostly from D&D, which not from reading anything, but from just like, hey, my character went to the Fey realm and everything is weird here and don't get into any bargains.
Yeah, my last D&D character, it was for a like one off campaign, but I was a little crazy Fey character. And it was very fun.
Right. And that's where and apparently, just from my brief research, apparently there is a lot of YA fantasy and a lot of it set in fey realm, fairy world. I don't know. There's other seely and unseely. I don't even know what those are. And they use those terms a lot in this book. I'm just like, okay, sure. Seely, unseely. All right. I didn't know. I was not expecting the amount of blood in this. I was not expecting gore. Straight up gore.
We saw rib cages.
Yeah, that's pretty rough.
I think I was surprised. It's weird because I wasn't when Jude finally murdered someone. I was like, oh, we're doing this. Okay. Like, she like hid the body, she buried it. I was just like, I appreciated how much the story did not shy away from it. And I thought that was kind of cool. Like, from that moment on, I knew that there would be consequences, that none of the side characters were safe. I assumed the main characters would be. And I think that made it really interesting. Like, as a reader, like, I felt like I was very tense after that moment. And I was tense before then, too, because a lot of crazy stuff had happened. But, like, they're not kidding when they're like, this world is chaos and like
it's terrible. It's so mean. Everything's terrible. Everything is awful.
This book is mean.
It is. I mean, the title is The Cruel Prince, so yeah. The cruel is right in the title there, but it is cruel. There's very little. I liked it.
Oh, I did too. Yeah,
I liked the book. I don't think I loved it. I don't know if that's really anything the book's fault, really. I think it's just me, mostly.
That's fair, because I feel like that's similar to feelings on some previous ones. Like Melmoth, I was like, I think this is a good book, but this book is not for me. Like, I'm not the audience for it, you know? Like,
right. I mean, have you read any of the Game of Thrones Fire and Ice, Ice and Fire?
I haven't. That's where I've had a feeling that is going to be a little bit too much violence for me. Like, I couldn't do the show, and I've heard the books are worse.
They're bad with that. There's a lot of it. To be fair, the books are incredibly long, so. Mm-hmm. It balances out because there's a lot of stuff that is also not violence, because there's so much world building and character and all that. You're not really, you know, it's not like every page. It's not every page. It's the same ratio, I would say, to this book, where, you know, you are like, hey, things are happening. You know, it starts off with her parents being brutally murdered.
Oh, my God. The writing in that whole section, like, it was so poetic and like, oh, she said something along the lines of like, the carpet that we're not allowed to track mud on is turning red, and like that line just like sent chills down my spine, and I was just, yeah.
And I ask about I think there is a certain Game of Thronesification of the world where you're like, it's just like Game of Thrones. I'm like, I don't know, that's not, it's just low fantasy. I know George R. R. Martin is very popular, so that's why people compare it. But it's a thing I've noticed with a lot of not a lot, but The Walking Dead is another series, television show and comic series, that has high body counts.
Right.
where no one is safe. And you're like, oh, they can kill anyone at any time. Game of Thrones is the same way. And I think it earned a lot of, attention because of that fact, of the fact that we are following these characters, we get attached to them, and then they will die. They are not, you know, the writer is not interested in necessarily like, oh yeah, I love these characters. I need to coddle them and make them safe and they won't get hurt. You know, they might get injured. They might lose someone they love. A supporting character might die, but they're fine in the end. In these types of works, you're like, no, people will die. And your characters you like will die. It's quite a high possibility. This isn't quite there, I think.
Yeah, I feel like the last book is going to be that sort of anything could happen feeling. But I think right now I'm like, okay, we have two full more books. I'm going to assume Cardin's safe and I'm going to assume Jude is safe, but everyone else is a little bit of a gamble. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if something happened with her sister, with Oak, with either of her sisters, Taryn or Vivi, like, and Maddock too. I'm like, whoa.
Maddock's dead, I guarantee you. I don't think he can't make it out of this alive. There's no way.
No. I liked that the stakes were high, though. And that it feels like there are Oh, man. I was thinking about characters who died, and then I thought about, what was her name? Was it Sophie, the human girl that she saved?
Yes.
How we got a glimpse of her at the coronation with like pointy teeth. Really looking forward to seeing where that pops up in the second book. She's, and if it matters, some
like,
you know,
she's like some enthralled sea monster now, basically.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I mean, I assume they mention it. She mentions it for a reason. I don't know.
I feel like she's got to, like, I don't feel like anything in that this book was placed just for the heck of it, you know?
Right. It feels well plotted, which is important because of I didn't know how much of the, how political this book would be, which it turns out to be very political. You know, this faction and fighting this faction versus, you know, a nobility trying to gain the throne and all that. A Game of Thrones, you might say. And you win or you die, Paige. That in a Game of Thrones, you either win or you die. Just so you know.
I was trying to think of something clever to say in response, and that's all I had. Just, good. Yes.
Yes. So...
No, more people are going to die in this series for sure.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I was waiting for the other shoe to drop. I don't know. I pegged a lot of the quote unquote twists before they happened.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay. So I don't want to say I knew something bad was going to happen at the coronation, but I didn't realize the extent of it until we were there. Like the clues, the hood in his pocket that he soaks the blood of his enemy, you know, which I'm still just like, what are the logistics of that? Like, he dips the hood in the blood of his enemies. Does it need to be drained? Like, what? I don't need to think that hard about it, but I did. I did think that hard about it. Anyway, what was I going? Oh, I didn't realize just how much violence there would be there. I figured someone would get murdered. I didn't think everyone was going to get murdered. And I knew that her, I feel weird calling him her father, but I guess she kind of made a statement that was like, well, I'm your daughter after all at the end. So, sure. I had a feeling that he was plotting something, but I didn't guess the extent of it. So, it's interesting that you called it. Like, 'cause I had that very, like, shocking, like, whoa.
I mean, it's kind of was a case of deduction. It's very much like, okay, who are the players here?
Yeah.
Who is going to be one? It's very clear that Carden is like, I think Carden is my biggest problem with this book.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have to, I'll
yeah, side, dive into that no, in a no, minute.
Yeah, we'll wait. We'll sidebar is Carden. Carden's his own topic. But I figure it's not Carden. They're playing it obviously too, like loosey goosey about, oh yeah, does he's sometimes is mean, awfully terrible, just awful to Jude. And then sometimes he's like, no, don't murder her with fruit. That'd be bad. let's not kill her with fruit. And then he, you know, and the thing that really, the one, it's when he pokes her with a pin.
Mm-hmm.
So she can, she puts her finger to her mouth and then she gets the salt and she's breaks the thrall or whatever it is. And that it's that moment I'm like, nah, Carden's not the bad guy here. And then you also get the moment where he's like beaten by his brother. Mm-hmm. And she's watching. I'm like, she's trying to muddy the waters too much with Carden. He's not a bad, he's a bad guy, but he's not the bad guy or whatever.
Right.
And it, you know, you're just like, well, who's left? Who's going to be orchestrating a massacre? I'm like, there's going to be something bad is going to happen at this coronation. If she went through and just made Dane king without any problems, I didn't see the series becoming Dane is the king and Jude is the spy master, kind of.
Yeah.
Which would be, I would assume what that series would be if Dane becomes king, is Jude defending and protecting the kingdom while being a spy. And then maybe she realizes Dane is bad and tries to unseat him or something.
Yeah.
But that, I was like, that doesn't feel like what this book is. It feels very much driven by Jude and Jude having to deal with being a human in this weird fairy world where everyone is terrible to each other at all times. And they don't care, I guess. They don't care that everyone's mean all the time. They have no real relationships. Everything is, even though they can't lie, it seems like they lie way more than the than she does. They just don't lie with their mouth.
Mm-hmm.
But it felt very much like Matic is just, hey, he's a dude that loves blood. Even before he puts his blood hat in his pocket for later.
just gonna put this in my pocket for no reason.
Yeah, no. Hey, Matic, why do you have your blood hat with you? Oh, no, I'm just carrying it around with me. Really? Just carrying it around? Even before that, it was very, of like, I don't trust this Matic. And the very fact, it felt very much like she was trying to lead us away because Jude was a little bit more sympathetic towards him. And he gives her a sword that was made by her real father, by her biological father, that Matic murdered at one point. And it's, I'm like, this is too simple. This is too easy. After all the terribleness, everything felt too good. You know, it was not totally matching everything that came before it. And I'm like, she's leading us. She's trying to numb us to something. Something bad is going to happen. And I'm like, it's probably Matic. He's probably double crossing Dane. I didn't see the oak thing. I did not guess at all.
Yeah. I started to piece that together, like that there was another error, like that was the extent of it. Did not think it was going to be Oak. That is, as soon as they started talking, I was like, wait a minute. And then Jude put it together and I was like, oh, wow. Like what a twist.
I sort of should have seen it with the acorns, that it was, there's a clear connection there. That is a very good subtle kind of hint at things, you know, like they're all acorns and et cetera, et cetera. What was I saying? Okay. Carden.
Oh yeah. Whew. Where do we even begin with that?
So The Cruel Prince, the title of the book feels, I mean, and like, I don't know, up until halfway through.
Right.
two-thirds of the way through, even. Two-thirds is basically where the coronation happens and where everyone dies. You know, there's deaths before that, but that's when there's, like, five murders all in, you know, in the span of five pages. And you're just like, okay, this is a lot. Up into the, like, halfway point, at least, you're like, the cruel prince is Cardin.
Mm-hmm, for sure. I mean, when we see him, doesn't he, like, rip the wings off someone, or she is remembering that?
The first thing he does at a party is just casually rip off some creature's wings. And... Whew, okay. And just casually mean to everyone, and he's in that little, the weird fairy clique with Locke and Nicasia and the guy, the other one that Judith ends up stabbing to death. I don't remember who it is. I forget his name.
No,
Ben or something.
I had a problem with both of their names, how to say them out loud, so I'm glad that you attempted, so I don't have to.
Ben, I forget the dude she kills and then buries behind the horse barn. But him, they're that clique of just, they're the mean girls of the nobility, I guess, because we don't really know any of the other, I assume that it's just not them and the sisters in these classes. Ooh. I assume there's like a wide array of other
students, yeah.
And they're just the mean ones who...
The clique.
And it starts with us, like, seeing just over and over and over and over again, Cardin is awful. Cardin is mean. Cardin does terrible, terrible things. And they have this, first it's just like a rivalry, and then it seems like it's a blood feud.
Yeah.
And I just cannot buy the face turn. I cannot buy, oh, Cardin suddenly, I can't get, it's, I can buy, like, oh, they have a uneasy alliance kind of going.
Mm-hmm. Well, but I still felt like at the end it was an uneasy alliance. Like, they don't trust each other.
Right.
They don't really like each other, even though they feel other things for each other.
Yeah, that's the thing that the kissing. A lot, there's the, that's the, I get it with Locke to a certain extent, because she doesn't have as strong as feelings of anger towards Locke, even though he's a scumbag, but they're all scumbags. I don't think I could say this enough. All the fairy people, they're all terrible. All of them. Even little Oak, he's young, so maybe he'll get better. But and Vivi is all right, but I feel like because she was raised for a while in human world, she's a little bit less.
She's like the cool, rebellious older sister. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I know that seems like it was the intention for her character, but I feel like she really pulls it off, and you're just like, ah, you're so cool. Yeah.
Right.
I don't know. I liked her.
No,
She felt very realistic, you know, but also, she, I think, is probably the most human character that we meet in the whole book.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even Jude, we're like in her head. So it's really easy to like justify the terrible things that she's doing, but we see her grow into a very like ruthless character who still cares a lot and still has like good in her, but she's not always doing good things. And I really liked how complex she was. And the whole time I was like, you hate him, but you're also attracted to him. Like the way that she was enjoying making him sort of like, I mean, she didn't realize he was jealous, but like whenever she was at Locke's party, she was kissing him, but really looking at Cardin. Like the whole time there was this like underlying attraction. And then when they finally kissed, to me, it didn't feel right or okay, if that makes sense. But it also made like it felt like, well, yeah, they're going to kiss now. Like, should you kiss someone you're holding captive? No, like, morally, there's a lot of not great stuff happening between them, but like the kiss to me, the tension that built up, I was just like, cool, they kissed finally, but I didn't necessarily want them to kiss. Does that make sense? Like,
right.
It's weird.
No,
like,
I mean,
it's like this weird ship that I'm like, I don't think I ship this, but why am I shipping this? But I don't ship this, but like the tension that they feel for each other, I feel like it rubs off a little bit on the reader, where you're like, no, I don't want this to happen, but I want this to happen, but I don't want this to happen. Like, it's interesting.
I mean, I think that's the push-pull is intended. She wants us to, you know, there are certain times where you're like, no, that's a bad decision. Don't do that. You know, and if you're ultimately trying to sell your characters, yeah, they have to make bad decisions because.
Yeah, for sure.
You can't write characters that are like, oh no, I'm going to do the right thing. I mean, I guess it depends on what you're writing, you know, action movies, you know, work because the guys, the protagonist is a badass and they'll like, oh yeah. Oh, and the villain has some evil thing and some clever. And then the action guy's, nope, it doesn't matter. And he overcomes the thing. But
yeah,
in this, it is intended. Like, Jude is not perfect. She makes mistakes. She's very, aggressive and impulsive because, you know, she's been given a bad deal in a lot of ways. You know, she watched her parents get murdered in front of her, and now she's living in a world where everyone's cruel to her all the time. I think it's, some of it is because I am very, in some ways, I'm very different than Jude, and I think it's hard for me to connect with her in especially choices about, like, when she's kissing Cardin, I'm just like,
don't do it.
I'm like, don't do it. That's a terrible decision, because Cardin is a scumbag.
Yeah.
And I'm also like, well, you just got betrayed by Locke. Like, Locke literally was just like, oh, you're so beautiful, and you're the whatever, like him using all his sweet words on her. And then he's like, no, I'm just going for your sister. You're just kind of around. Isn't that nice of me? Oh, wait, I'm terrible. And
was that a twist you expected?
After it was established that, oh, no, actually, well, I think very, very, I highlighted very early in the book is very, they make a very big, she makes a very big, I keep saying they, she makes a very big point of emphasizing humans can lie. Humans can lie. Humans can lie. Mm-hmm. And fairies, the fae can't. They can't lie. They always have to tell the truth, or they have to be very clever about how they talk. And that is a very big point. But like, it is not necessarily, they're not always going to tell the truth. They just might not say something. You know, they omit things, and that's not technically a lie, so it's okay. But that's why they have to, you know, be very clever about how they talk and how they enter in bargains with people, because they can't lie. And so I was set up to, you know, think, okay, that has to be something that has to be meaningful, and it becomes pretty meaningful. It becomes very much about what is truth, what is a lie, and how, yes, humans can lie. Yes, Jude is a good spy and a good rat. A good mouse, a mole, because she can lie to people's faces, doesn't have to resort to clever wordplay. But in the end, I don't see a meaningful difference between her and the Fae and how they speak. It's just the Fae have to be a little bit more clever about stuff. And I think that is on purpose, because the whole book is, I think, largely about Jude becoming one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Becoming ingratiated into this society, becoming as mean and awful as they are, and having to do these things because that is how you survive in this kind of in the Fae realm among the nobility, because they are all cruel, because they are all clever. She has to survive in this place and to persist. She has to do this stuff. Saying, oh, I wish she was smarter, but I think if I bought into the fact that Cardin is supposed to, it feels like she softens on Cardin a lot in the end of the book.
Mm-hmm.
Cardin is clearly not as evil as the rest of his family, or not as dead as the rest of his family either. We're supposed to soften on Cardin a little bit because suddenly, oh, he's admitted, oh no, I actually am terrible to you because I have a crush on you. And I'm just like, none of this makes, I it's just so counter. It feels like, how old is Cardin? Do we know how old he is? Do the Fae age differently than we do? I know they're immortal.
So, I think they live longer, but I think he's supposed to be the same age-ish as her. Like, I feel like they're born and they grow up the same. They just, like, live a very, very long time.
Right.
At least that's kind of, like, the impression that I got. I got that they were all high schoolers. Like, it's not like he's, it's not like an Edward Cullen thing going on where he's, like, hundreds of years old and
acting like an 11-year-old.
Immature, too, which I liked, like, reading the scenes with him and his clique. Yeah, they're horrible, but they also felt really realistic to, like, I was talking about this book with a friend just the other day, and I was like, you know, I feel like a lot of girls in high school can relate to having a crush they don't want on the hot, mean guy. And so maybe that's, like, one of the reasons that he did feel like kind of realistic to me, where he's not to, like, I'm saying this not justifying any of his behavior because he is the worst, but I felt like the circumstances, the way he grew up, it doesn't excuse anything, but it kind of helped build him as a character. And I don't know. Like, to me, he was out of options. Jude kind of had all the power. And then they make that pact for a year and a day where he's, like, sworn his loyalty, I guess, like, to be her puppet. And so towards the end, their power dynamic kind of makes sense. And I feel like we're reminded how charming he's supposed to be. And I think the reader, along with Jude and the Court of Shadows, is that what they were called?
Yes.
The Court of Shadows. They're all kind of drawn in and a little bit charmed. Like, she walks in and they're all, like, sitting and laughing and playing cards. And I don't know. The softening up of him, for me, it happened at, like, the right time in the book where I was ready for a little bit of character growth and, like, for their relationship to not necessarily get romantic, but to move forward in whatever alliance they were going to form.
I have multiple thoughts going on in my head. I need to decide on one. I feel like I already referenced Game of Thrones, and the Cardin feels like Jaime Lannister to me.
Huh. That's interesting.
And I kind of soured on Game of Thrones as it went on. And I'm not going to try and say this is going to do the same thing Game of Thrones does, because they're very different in a lot of ways. But it feels Jaime Lannister in Game of Thrones is, like, at first a complete and total monster, worse than Cardin. Mm-hmm. He literally throws a boy out of a tower. And that's, you know, they're among many other terrible things he does. But then book, like, three or four books later, George R. R. Martin's like, I actually need him to be a good guy. And so you're like, and then so you get the rehabilitation of Jaime Lannister as a good guy. And I never buy into it. I never go, oh, he's suddenly a good guy now. I'm like, no, he's still the same guy that pushed a kid off a tower and nearly killed him. I think that's what I come back to at the end when I say I like it, I don't love it, and I think it's largely because of me, not necessarily the book, is I don't think I like anyone in this book.
Interesting.
I mean, I like Vivi. I mean, I don't like any of the main characters. I like Vivi.
You want a spinoff where it's her and Heather and Oak in the human world going to Target, yeah, eating ice cream.
Yeah, that's nice, honestly. That sounds pretty good.
You want
good.
That middle fantasy.
Yes, I went that middle fantasy. it's just, I find them compelling. I find Jude very compelling. And I mean, I don't mean like as in, oh, I think they're boring or I don't like reading about them, because I find all the intrigue very interesting. I'm kind of a sucker for political drama in fantasy settings, and that's a lot of them are that. And this is, it's well set up, it's well plotted. I'm interested to see, you know, among who what becomes of this kingdom. I really like all the sub fae factions with the ones like, this one loves humans, this one doesn't, this one's just a bloodthirsty warrior, this one is got their power by this way and this way. I think all those
these people all just play the flute.
Yeah, exactly. And you're just like, okay, that's and I'm assuming that as we go, that will enter a larger equation of like trying to please all these sub factions and keep them in line and worry about betrayal from them. So I'm very interested in that. I'm interested in Jude. I want to see because despite the fact, you know, the whole end of the book is her trying to set up. To try and keep her father, Matic, from becoming the regent, from basically crowning Oak, then ruling in his stead, ruling through him, and then basically forever, because Oak at a certain point will just be an empty king, and Matic will be the person actually in charge. And she's like, I don't want that. And then she is literally doing the same thing. She is now the regent, basically. She is the puppet master in charge of Cardin, even though it's only a year and a day, but we'll see. Who knows? I find all that very fascinating and very, it's well written. This whole book's well written. The prose is very good. It's more, Jude is a bad person. She becomes a bad person. Cardin is a bad person. All the Fae are bad people for the most part. It seems like they're so callous and casual towards murder and death. Like, literally, that scene where everyone dies at the coronation, Jude is describing how they love chaos and bloodshed, and now the whole crowd's just like, they don't care that people are dying. They're just like, oh, this is exciting.
Yeah.
And you're just like, ugh. And I don't like that. I want, at the end of the day, have someone that is still pure and good, even if they aren't safe, or if they are, you know, because they're pure and good, they might get killed. I think I want that, and it's kind of the reason I soured on The Walking Dead. It's a reason I soured on Game of Thrones. It's that I'm just watching a bunch of terrible people fight, and that's the real life right now. I'm watching a bunch of terrible people fight. And I go to books to escape from that. I want a happy ending sometimes. And now, like, maybe the happy ending, it feels like tonally this book is set up that I would expect at the end of the day. Like, the third book you said is already the title of The Queen of Nothing. And I'm like, so it's a terrible, sad ending. Which is what I would expect.
I'm so curious about. I'm wondering, because through book one, we've already seen Jude lose so much of her humanity. And I feel like she still has some left. But throughout the rest of the series and to the end of the book, is her heart going to be completely hardened? Or is there a chance for a happy ending? Like, and I'm fascinated. Like, I'm so curious where it's going to end up, because like where this book, where she stands currently as a character from what I've read, which is just book one, I still really like her. And I don't know if that's just, you know, because at a point in time I was a angry teenage girl, not quite as angry, not quite filled with rage, but you know, like, There's something in her that is like relatable to me in some tiny level, which is weird to say because does like some awful things in the book. But I want I want to see her happy at the end, and I just don't know that that can happen. So, yeah.
I can't imagine an ending that sees her being happy. Like, I could
see it. I'm gonna cry a lot.
I could see it like a happy ending. She is not a part of it.
I would kind of love if it ended with her being like the ruler, and she's then like totally evil. Like, I, you know what I mean? Like, if mm-hmm. the, but then I feel like that would be really, it would be interesting to see if Holly Black can keep her, because it seemed like to you she wasn't as likable. But for whatever reason, I still found her, like, really likable. But I don't know if in book two that feeling is going to remain, or if I'm going to start to be like, oh my God, Jude, no, don't do any of these things. I'm so mad at you. Because I wasn't as frustrated with her as I thought I would be. I was kind of like, I was delighted by her mischief, which I guess is good. Which I guess means that I've found a series that I'm ready to throw myself into and read more of. But yeah, I don't know. I can definitely see why she wouldn't be likable though. Like, and you're totally right. Like, all these characters, they've done some bad stuff. At the first, I was like, oh, the ghost. He seems great. He seems like, and then you find out what he did and you're like, oh man.
Oh, come on. Oh, you poisoned a pregnant woman.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. You're cool. Good, aren't you? It's, I don't know. Maybe it's, I'm kind of programmed. Game of Thrones has broken my brain a little bit, because the whole point of that is to say, like, everyone involved in, if you involve yourself in this, in these mm-hmm. kind of political wars between nobility, to win, you have to be more cruel and worse than your competitor. You have to be willing to sink yourself to the lowest level to win. And right. That's clear what this book is leading to, because, like, to be fair, Jude largely orchestrates everything without killing anyone, you know, even though I think it would be better off if she just let Madoc die. I don't think he needs to. Why is she? That's the, I think, the only other kind of, my only other misgiving between, like, character relationships is I like the fact that she has this kind of very tormented relationship with Madoc, because he takes care of her and protects her and will do anything to protect her. But he also murdered her mother and father in front of her when she was a child, and has a blood hat soaked, like, constantly soaked. Like, he just keeps it in the house, and it's a constant reminder of, oh yeah, he murders, he loves war and loves killing. And literally when she asks him, how do you sleep at night? He's like, oh, actually, I sleep fine. It's when I don't do all the killing that is when I lose sleep. And I'm like, whoa, this guy is irredeemable. You should just kill him. There's no reason to keep him alive. And, like, that's, I understand that's probably a mistake that's going to end up costing her in the end, I assume. Right. But it pragmatically, it's very much like, he's caused way more pain to you than he's caused good, at least from what we've seen. You know, there's a lot of years that we don't see in this book.
That's true. That'll be interesting if we get any more glimpses into her growing up in Faerie, and see, like, more of those little moments that have kind of strengthened the weird bond that they have. I thought it was very, like, an interesting approach to have her be like, something in that first, after the opening chapter, it was, it's something along the lines of, like, and despite myself, I love him. And I don't think I've ever read a book where something like this has happened, in general, probably. But, you know, she now lives with the person who kidnapped her, who murdered her parents, who has now become this father figure. The closest thing I can think of off the top of my head is, like, for every reason, I thought that he would be some sort of, like, wicked stepmother sort of person in her life. And then we got into that next chapter. And I was like, wow, what an interesting take on this dynamic. Like, it's very, it felt very new. It felt very real since she was so young when she came here that she's developed this strange fondness for him, like this from like family bond despite herself. And I don't feel like I've ever read anything like it. And I thought that was a really cool approach to just make him not less evil, because he's still evil, but make him feel realer and make their relationship and the life she's had feel realistic in a weird way. It was definitely really jarring when we jumped into it. And I was like, oh, you're having like normal conversations with him. Like, you're delighted when he's proud of you, like, and we're getting these little reminders of how numb you are to like the thing that he's done when she like goes and she looks at the hood of blood and she's like, and every time I do it, I feel a little less. And I was like, wow, like what a weird experience. I don't know. Like I was fascinated by their relationship. I thought it was a cool direction to go in. But at times you kind of wanted to like scream, like, and be like, remember what he did. Don't forget what he is. And I feel like she's reminding herself through it, like, I shouldn't forget the sort of monster he is. And yet I can't help myself. I just thought that was really, really fascinating. Well done, Holly Black. What a weird relationship.
I think it's mostly, my problem with it is mostly the ending of this.
Mm.
And I think, what is the end of their relation? Like, why? The question comes, like, why doesn't she kill him?
Yeah.
Why doesn't, when she poisons him, why doesn't she just give him enough poison so that he dies?
I don't know. She's got to have a plan for him. Or it's not a plan. Or she is, I mean, just being short-sighted. Like, she right. is a teenager, you know?
Right. And I think it's a lot of questions that probably can't be answered until you read the whole series. You know, you don't necessarily know, oh, well, why wouldn't it? It's just every time I read a book that has, you know, it's the first in a long series, or not, this series isn't long, it's a trilogy. That's not that long. But it's a thing I go, oh, well, they need them for later books. It's always in the back of mind. It's like, oh, well, they need them around because they're important to the plot later on. And I don't mind that she keeps him alive because, yeah, of course, she says lots of times about how she's conflicted about how she feels about him because, yes, he's taken care of her. He's kept her alive. He's also one who brought you here. He's also the one that's basically stranded you here because everyone you knew and loved is dead because he killed them literally in front of you. I can appreciate the fact, oh, yeah, she likes it when he is proud of her. He likes it. She feels good when he teaches her things and he shows, you know, he obviously, you know, has trust in her. And how Ariana talks about how, yeah, he must be absolutely infatuated with you because there's no, like, he's doing all these things and you're human and you're not even his real daughter. You know, you're just adopted, and yet he still gives you all these things. And it just feels like an abusive relationship at the end of the day. And it feels like someone who is just giving an abuser more and more and more and more rope. And I want it to end now. I wanted them.
For sure.
I want you to just go, oh yeah, I am now a spy master who – I'm a murderer now. Sometimes you're like, oh, well, she was defending herself. You know, she was getting attacked. She had to kill someone because she was going to die otherwise. But right. And then times she's just sitting in a tree and just crossbowing people. They don't see it. They just get crossbowed and they're dead. Goodbye. You don't know who they are. They're just some person. She was told they were a spy. She doesn't really know what they are. She's just like, it's a messenger. Pa-chung! And clunk. No more messenger, and that's like cold-blooded murder.
Right.
And so, she's definitely not afraid to murder people, which she is very clear. And like, well, one, she did murder your parents, and two, he is definitely in the way of this political thing you're trying to get done. And he definitely is not going to give up. That's one thing he definitely does not do.
Yeah, she probably should have just killed him.
And I understand that, hey, people are allowed to make, characters are allowed to make mistakes and be dumb, you know, be short-sighted. Maybe I just wanted a little bit more.
You wanted the bloodshed.
I wanted that. I wanted an explanation. I wanted to know, like, why is she just poisoning him enough to put him to sleep, but not necessarily to kill him? Why isn't she getting him out of the way? And then, like, if another character asked, all it would take is for Cardin to look at her and go, why didn't you just kill him? Yeah. And then she could go, could ask questions like, oh, well, I still love him in a weird way and I can't do it.
Yeah, I'm not ready.
Yes. And that's all I wanted, really. And it just, there wasn't quite, and I think that's my, this book should be longer.
I know, right? That's the trouble I have with trilogies, sequels, whatever, sometimes, because I feel like it ended probably where it had to end. But at the same time, I feel, maybe I just want another book. Maybe I just want to read the next one.
I mean, it's not that I agree. Like, if, okay, at a certain point, yeah, she could write, you know, a 100,000-page book or something, you know, something ridiculous like that, and make this all one book. I'm not going to necessarily complain about, you know, series books and trilogies and how that all works. I think at the end of the day, you read a book and either you're satisfied with it and want to read more about these characters, or you're not satisfied. And if you're satisfied, then I think that answers its own question. That, yeah, it's fine that it's a series, because I read one book one and I go, I'm satisfied with what I read and I want more. And that is, I think that answers your own question. Like, is this a series that is ethical? Is it or is it just like, oh, this is blatantly just a cliffhanger to try and get us to read book two?
Right.
And I don't think that's true at all in this. I feel like this has a nice solid arc to it, where you get Jude starting out as mostly innocent, and she ends up, and now she's this kind of spy master and a manipulator, and she's in this interesting position with Cardin. And I think it ends in a perfect spot, and I'm not complaining about that at all. I want more in the middle. I want more of, give me more of these different noble houses. Give me more of her training for a spy mat. Like, there's lots of sequences where she's like, and I did this and this, I did it the next day and the next day and the next day, and I'm really tired. I'm like, well, I want to know. I want to see those details. I want to see every interaction with Roach. I want to see every interaction with the ghost. We barely know the bomb. The bomb seems like a really fun character.
Yeah, the bomb does seem really cool. I hope we get to know her more in the second one. But, now that you've said that, I feel like I could have done with one more scene of her, like, learning to be a spy and failing. And I think her, like stealing a servant and breaking the spell and stuff, that was supposed to do that for us. But I kind of wanted to see her mess up a little bit more, because I do feel like it was like, I did training. Now I'm great at this. Like, and I don't know if you kind of like, I don't know, like a little bit more of a ramp up would have maybe added to it.
Yeah. Training montage. Give us, you know, she makes mistake here, and then she gets better.
Yeah.
And I think that's it. And I think that's not a bad problem to have, where I go, I want to see more of your world. I want to see more of the details. And I think that is the world building could be fleshed out more. There could be more about this interesting Fey realm. I don't know if it's that she assumes, I think I read that this is set in the same world that she's already written books in.
Oh, interesting.
I'm not positive, because that was not by like some, I don't know, that's hearsay at this point, because I haven't read the books and I don't even know if I trust the person who said that. But maybe she assumes that some people have read those books and knows a lot, or has read a lot of YA fantasy where it's set in Fey realms, and you're kind of, a lot of this is shorthand, and you should know most of this stuff already, because you assume kind of a familiarity with the genre, familiarity with the setting, or something like that. I'm not a typical reader, I'm assuming, of hers, but I wanted more. I want, that's where I, when I'm reading fantasy, I'm kind of buying in at a certain point. I'm going, I want to know as much as you can give me about this world. I want to see all your made up rules. I want to know the rules of, and I think it's not at some points here, just like, well, how does that work? Because she gets the Gaius, whatever, however you say that word.
Yeah. I don't know how to say that.
Whatever. And she gets that, which protects her against being enthralled. She can't, another fae can't just tell her to do something and then she'll do it. Which normally she has to wear a necklace or wear her clothes inside out or have salt. Or like there's immediate, like a bunch of different things that supposedly mitigate those things. But apparently the king or the prince telling her, hey, you're fine now, against that. But then later on, she eats the fruit. And it doesn't protect her because the fruit does something to her that makes her suggestible.
That was interesting too, where it was like the fruit itself has a different set of rules, which I don't need to suspend too much disbelief to be like, okay, well, basically she can't be compelled, but if she ingests something that has its own powers, it still has effects. Like I kind of liked how she like peppered in the world building and it wasn't like a big info dump. Like we got like a little bit here and a little bit there, but I can understand like the desire to have more explained and more answers and it not just being like a little bit left up to the imagination, you know?
I hesitate to ever say, oh, I wish there was more world building, because I usually am a person who loves cut to the quick stories, does not spend a lot of time on, and I, you know, when I say I want more world building, I mean, I want good world building. I want it to be like you set your characters in a place and by following them, you understand the world, not necessarily here's how this world works. Here's a bunch of rules. Here's a person explaining it. Here's them literally giving a character a book that is just here's rule number one. Here's rule number two. And they read the book for us. I'm like, oh, that's no, I don't want that. But I definitely, in fantasy, I think I can make the exception, and in science fiction, for that matter, where I can go, well, I will take in the extra time I want, because I want you to establish what this world is and how it works. And I think knowing certain rules about how the fae work and how their bargains work, just setting up those at some point makes me understand the stakes better. Makes me understand, can someone get out of this? Are their bargains immutable? Are there, you know, they talk a lot about how, yeah, you don't, obviously you can't agree. You don't want to agree to anything with a fae because there's always fine print somewhere. You know, it's the monkey's paw situation. You go, yeah, they'll give me what I want. And then also this terrible thing happens.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at some points I was a little confused is that all the time? Like you literally can never talk to another fae. And if they say, hey, you want me to go get you lunch? Can you just say, no, thank you. I will get my own. Do you have to always, can you never literally take an offer from a fae? Because they may mean like, I'm going to get you lunch, but you'll die. And I'm like, oh, no, okay. No, that is, I mean, she never accepts a drink from anyone in the book. So, and, you know, at a certain point, she starts poisoning herself, which I love.
That was really cool.
I really like that a lot. Again, when I say, I would like this book to be more book, that's not necessarily a bad complaint. It's more like, right. I want more book in this book because I like it a lot. Are you going to be reading book two, Paige?
Yes, I'm going to read book two, and then I'm going to just mope around and lament waiting for book three to come out, depending on how book two goes, I guess, because I mean, I might get mad. She made a lot of promises at the end of book one that I think are going to blow up in her face in book two. I also know some spoilers, I think. And so I'm interested to see when and how they happen.
At a certain point, I think I start seeking out spoilers for a series.
Yeah. You're like, tell me what happens. What to expect.
Well, should I read it? Should I keep going? And I don't know. Like, there's at a certain point, I'm very weary of series, and weary and wary, I would say.
That's fair.
And it's not. I don't know. Maybe it's because I've read so much about about book marketing, and about here's how you make money now selling books. You have to make series because people will read one and then read book one or book two through book one or book two, and then they'll go, I need to read the rest, and then they make all their money. And I go, well, sometimes stories don't need to be series. Sometimes you just tell them, and then you're done, and you move on to another one. And that's how I work. I come up with a lot of ideas for books. I never go, oh, this would make a great series. Usually I go, that's the end of the character. They had their arc, and they're done. And there's not much else to do with them. Like, do they, you know, it's not, I can't think of characters like, oh, it's Batman. Batman will have many adventures. It's not Indiana Jones, where he has many adventures. It's not, you know, I can't think of just not how I work. And I don't necessarily blame people who can't. It's not, I can't think of like, oh, Buffy, you know, she's a vampire hunter, but then there's this whole world she encounters. I'm on the fence. I'm gonna read book two.
I was gonna ask.
I'm on the fence. It might just be like, hey, Paige, was book two good? And, and you'll go like, yeah, it was great. I'm like, well, then I'll take
your I guess criticisms into consideration, and I'll be like, okay, yes, but like I'll try to give you an informed endorsement.
Yes. I don't want any of my criticisms to disinfluence people from reading this. I think this is very good. I think the prose is very good. I think that it's a thing that you listen to any kind of criticism about art, and they don't, it's hard to go into the nitty gritty of like, was the prose good and why was it good? I think she knows when to be descriptive and when to not be descriptive. I think she knows when to pull her punches for the most part. Yeah. I think she knows when she, like, we talk about how gory it is. It's really the most of that is isolated to the coronation. Not like gore in the typical sense, although there is a lot of like cruelty gore, if that makes any sense. Like, there's a lot of,
I mean, the scene where she stabs her hand, gore, but it's also kind of like there's like weird power dynamic bullying with violence, like peppered throughout this book,
and it's uncomfortable,
for sure,
very uncomfortable. And I think that's the other thing. It feels I think it's the main thing that is making me reticent and hesitant to read book two. Is this is what it feels like to me. It feels like we are watching Jude being the victim of being in abusive relationships because of being in the power dynamic that she lives in. You know, she is a human, she's a minority in this world, and she's constantly the victim of abuse from everyone except her own father. And even then, her father is abusive to her in a weird, like, a weird way, because he makes her live with him. And makes her live in this world, and stranded her there. But in other ways, it's very loving and protective, and it is, very uncomfortable for me. But it feels like the arc of this story, over its entire arc, is going in the direction of she has been bullied and abused, and the solution to that is she becomes the bully.
Yeah, I definitely see it going that direction too.
And
the hero becomes the villain.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily think that's a bad way for a story arc to go. It is definitely one I'm not interested in. Maybe I've just read too many of them, or I am just in a mind state right now where I just don't want that. You know, I want the bad guys to lose. I want the good guys to win most of the time. And I want the characters to realize what is good and what is bad. You know, I can imagine. Yeah. I don't think that this series will necessarily be like, hey, black and white. Yeah, now Jude is a bad person and she wins. It's the gore doesn't bother me. It is just the constant of like that scene where they force feed her the fruit and then they mm-hmm. make her strip. It's so uncomfortable. And I understand Jude becoming a monster because of the things they do to her. At a certain point, I'm like, why isn't Jude doing worse things to them? Like, they are terrible. She's in power now. She can do anything. Why doesn't she take advantage of it? And I don't, like, it makes me feel gross a little bit.
That's totally fair. You're like, I thought it was interesting when she was hiding and she saw Cardin getting, like, beaten by by his brother, but by the hand of the human servant.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like surprised that she wasn't enjoying it.
Right.
And that was still somewhat earlier on in the book. So it's going to be interesting to see if she changes in that way where she starts to enjoy watching suffering.
Yeah. Inflicting pain.
And I hope not. I hope that isn't the case, you know?
Can I ask you a question, Paige?
Yeah.
Okay. This is another thing that did not sell for me, but maybe it...
Okay, I'm so nervous.
No, it's a minor thing.
Okay.
But it's just a weird thing, and I just don't know if you... She finds that piece of paper folded up in Alice in Wonderland. She finds... Where Cardin has just scrawled her name hundreds of times, like a serial killer, on a piece of paper and folded it up and put it in a book.
That's a normal thing to do, right?
That's the other thing. It's very much like I've had crushes on people throughout my life. And sometimes I can't necessarily like, oh, you know, I know why I'm a crush on that person because she's pretty, not because she's a nice person or because she's, you know, has a good personality or whatever. She's funny. It's all 100% looks. And I know that, and I don't like myself. Like you talked about earlier, liking someone, having a crush on someone that you don't like.
You're like,
I like that person, but I don't like that I like that person. Mm-hmm. Never have I. Or anyone I've ever known in my entire life to just write their name down hundreds of times on a piece of paper. Have you known anyone to do that?
Yeah. So not hundreds of time with blood splattered on the page, because that would be weird. But I do remember, I don't know that I ever did it, but I remember having friends who had notebooks with like the really cliche, like the name with like hearts and like variations of what like Mrs. so-and-so. Like I literally saw that in middle school and high school, so I feel like if you take that trope and you twist it into something Cardin would do, it kind of makes sense. Maybe he was drunk. He's drunk a lot in the book.
He is help.
He is filled with rage
and self-loathing,
and weird feels and self-loathing. So like, if I sit down and I let myself think about it too much, I'm like, ooh, Cardin, that's a weird thing to do, but he's a weird guy. So it didn't take me out of the moment too much. It did make me like gasp when I got to that page, cause I'm reading the paperback and I don't know how it looks on Kindle, but in the paperback, it is a different script with the blood splatter.
Yes, that's how it looks. It looks like that in the Kindle as well. Yeah, they have the picture in there, and I don't. Where did that blood come from?
I think his hand. I think he was like clutching the pen. Like,
was he writing with a knife? Like, what's
he might have been?
Oh God,
the crazy guy filled with rage and doesn't know what a pen is. They don't have pens in the fairy world. It's all just knives and bloodshed.
It's Sometimes feels like they, yeah, it feels like if they told me that, oh yeah, we get our ink from the blood of humans. We
You're just, like, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it makes sense. They just make, they have a human just sit by and they just stab them and then write for a while. Oh, out of at blood.
The, yeah, that, at the last ball, the chandelier was lit by captured fairies.
Yeah.
So human blood is ink, sure.
Okay. Is there anything we haven't talked about, Paige, that you wanted to bring up?
I don't think so. I feel like we covered most of it. Yeah. Did you have a thing?
No, I just, that him writing her name over and over and over again, I can't fathom. I cannot.
Can you imagine if it had been the opposite and it was like Jude's name with like hearts and swirls?
That
Cardi and June for or June Jude forever.
I would have that makes more sense to me than him just madly writing her name over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, you want
blood splatter. I think it feels a little bit like too purposefully a red herring of very much.
Okay,
like,
yeah.
Where it's just like, oh no, he definitely has it out for me because he's scrawling my name angrily on a blood splattered page and just hiding it in the book.
Like, we know what this is. This isn't because he hates you. Well, it kind of is, but it's also not.
I guess I can't empathize too much. I think that's the other thing. It's like Cardin is so alien to me.
Yeah.
Like I've never been with people that are like, I've never been friends with someone who's just like, oh yeah, I feel bad that I like someone and I feel that so much about it that I'm going to just write her name down hundreds of times. Like I'm the serial killer from Seven and she is just going to totally kiss me later and totally enjoy it. And then I did like, there is a very specific line where I thought it was great. It turns out having kissed someone, the possibility of kissing hangs over everything, no matter how terrible an idea it was the first time.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. That was very good. And there's lots of very clever writing in this. Actually surprisingly funny at times for a book that's so grim.
Definitely. I liked the line at the last, it was like the banquet. That last like big scene where he was like, have I told you how like repulsive you look tonight? And she was like, no, go on. And he was like, I can't. It's because he can't lie and he thinks she looks pretty. And I was like, that's funny, you just dug yourself into a hole because you're trying to be mean but you can't literally say it because you think she's hot stuff and you hate yourself for it. And I don't know, made me laugh.
I think that I wish I knew how. I don't think I ever had an actual judge of how, what, if they were like conventionally attractive. Her sister, I mean, Jude and her sister are twins, and mm-hmm. but then her sister is like the girly girl, and Jude is like the tomboy because she likes fighting. She likes fighting. She wants to be a knight. She likes fighting and knighting. but. I never get an idea of like, oh, actually, yeah, they're I don't know how to judge what the Fae think are pretty.
Like, yeah, that's fair. But they do, it seems like they think humans are like, it's weird. It's like humans are worthless, but also pretty and valuable and strengthen bloodlines. Like it's
I wish, maybe I hope there's more word loading there too.
Yeah.
I don't think I have anything else. I think I like it, the book. I think it's good. I think it's well written. I am maybe burned on. I think I can deal with like books like Melmoth because they end.
And yeah, that's then, fair.
And you're like, oh, the horribleness, it's over now. And there's an ending. Maybe if I read the entire series, maybe I just read 1, 2, 3 all at once, I wouldn't feel.
Maybe just wait till next January and you can read the second and third ones and just knock it out,
right? And then just be like, okay, it's over.
Yeah,
I'm out of this place. Maybe that's really why I'm not kind of, I feel like I'm up in the air whenever I'm in the middle of series and I haven't finished them, and it's just, oh, now I'm feeling unsettled because I don't know how it ends.
Yeah.
Also, okay, one, I do actually have a final question.
Okay.
Who's, is this, you know, I think it's, this is a question more, that has a lot to do with my preconceptions about what okay. young adult is.
Oh, this is a question, yeah.
We've read multiple young adult books now,
mm-hmm.
where extraordinary high levels of gore and yeah, there's no sex in this, but there is definitely there's kissing and romance and all, but it's more the gore I have a problem with than anything. Where who's the target audience of this? Is it for adults? Is it for like they say like it's published? The publisher for this is Little Brown Books for Young Readers, and I'm like, I, as a 13-year-old, I would maybe say, yeah, read that. But this is really adult. Like, yeah, she's a teenager. And I think, yeah. And you know, you've said before, like, oh, it's because they're young adults. The characters are young adults. It has nothing to do with the content necessarily. But then you're also saying that sometimes there's, you know, you can't have sex. Theoretically. But then you also say, no, that's changed as well. You can have as much sex as you want. And as much extraordinarily high levels of violence as you want. And I'm like, well, what's the, isn't this just a fantasy novel then? There's plenty of older fantasy novels before YA was a thing where it had teenage protagonists. Is it just because now it is a genre that people attach to?
Okay. Yeah, it's interesting because the level of violence, even some of the, there isn't sex, but like, I feel like there's things that allude, and I guess a lot of young adult books do that. So really, it's just the content and the violence levels. Like, we just get thrust into violence within the first pages. But I feel like a lot of young adult books do that now. Like, it's not really, I don't know where the line is anymore. I know that new adult tried to be a thing a couple years back, and it didn't do very well. And so now a lot of books that would have, or maybe even people could argue should have had protagonists that are like in their 20s, kind of that college age, have been re-edited under like publishers or editors' advice to be marked down to like the teen genre just because it sells so much better. So
it's more a question to me is like, well, if they are the only thing distinguishing them is like, oh, there's teenage characters.
Right.
I think it's
weird because I think so, but at the same time, like, I don't read, I mostly read young adult fiction.
Right.
So I had the most recent adult books that I've read have either been ones that we've read on book club or the occasional romance novel, which is always adults and stuff. And I don't really read too much of, but I always get them for free at conventions. So sometimes I'll be like, all right, let's see with this weird shape-shifting bird and wolf romances. And I read like 20 pages and I go, I think I'm done. And then, so the adult books I've like exposed myself to haven't been like enough to know how popular it would be for them to have a teenage protagonist, or if that all just gets pushed into young adult now.
It just confuses me because it feels like a strange thing, because like I have ideas for horror novels that have mm-hmm. teenagers as the main characters, but I would just write a horror novel. Most writers don't think like that, where they go, I can't include this because it doesn't fit. They just write the story that they're writing. They go, oh, this belongs in the story or it doesn't. And you know that kind of at a gut level, largely.
Yeah, I think with young adults, since that's what I write, I assumed that there were more rules and guidelines than there really are. So I have had a habit of holding myself back while drafting, And thinking to myself, like, oh, well, is that really appropriate? Is that going to allow me to not do school visits? And this is like as subtle as for A Girl Called Monster, I edited the F word out of it. There was a little bit of that in there. Not a ton, but like if you read it, there's, I know. I mean, in the hair salon, the, mm-hmm. it's like
they would curse.
They would curse. And so while I was drafting, it was something I put in. But when I did it, I knew, well, this might be something I take out because I want to be allowed in libraries. I want to do school visits and I don't want it to ever be a problem. But then I pick up young adult books and I go, well, gosh, like, I guess it really doesn't matter because I've seen worse language and content than the F word.
Yeah, it is a question of, I know we, the question of genre is always very interesting to me.
Yeah.
And how certain things get put into certain places and how genres form, because like, you know, there's more and more genres now,
a lot of subgenres.
Yeah. A lot of subgenres. Sure. 50 years ago, there was like five, you know, you either wrote this, and then that's it. And if you're something weirder inside of that, well, too bad. You're mm-hmm. you're science fiction or your fantasy or your literary or your horror or your like a suspense or action or right. whatever. You're romance. And like that's it. You're not there now. There's thriller and psychological thriller and suspense thriller and young adult and young adult horror. And then you're like, but
yeah, young adult has all of the same genres just
with teenage characters.
Protagonists. Right. Yeah.
And like I read Stephen King. It has a bunch of teenagers in it.
Yeah, that's not the one I was going to bring up, and that's not a young adult book.
No, like, not at all. It is. No. I don't really like it that much, frankly. It has a lot of fans. I don't understand. I think it's kind of middling Stephen King and his hundreds of books he's written. But I don't know. It's just a question that always comes, especially when I'm reading, like, you know, when we read something that's a little, you know, lighter, like our next book, I go, okay, yeah, that makes sense to me. It feels like it's a question of tone at some point. But then otherwise you're like, well, this is dark and The Merciless is dark. And I'm like, well, isn't it just horror? Isn't it just fantasy then? Like, yeah, there's a young, like, is it that? Maybe I am just not atypical, you know, I'm not a typical reader where they go, I want to read a character, like they know what they want very specifically. Mm-hmm. You know, they want a teenage character. They always, you know, I want young characters that I want to read about. I don't care about older people characters. I think they're boring for whatever reason. And I mean, like, I like reading everything. And maybe I'm just not a normal person, which I know that already.
I think, you know, it's weird because I think I do really like, I like young adult romance, but I haven't found a adult romance in recent years. And I haven't really tried, but I think I like kind of like, I think the tone of a young adult romance is always going to be like first loves and kind of innocent and sweet, as where when you get into like adult romance, it can get a little too much, like, and a little bit more, I guess a young adult has its cliches too, but I feel like it depends. Sometimes there is a difference, like where that I can see what would be considered adult and what would be considered young adult. With like horror and fantasy, like what we just have read, like the books that we've read in the past and this one, that's where I don't know if I read enough adult fantasy, or I mean, I hardly ever read adult horror. The Scooby-Doo novel that we read, it was the closest thing I've come to that in a while.
It's not really, that's not really our novel, exactly. To be fair.
So I don't think I read enough of that to be able to say like, oh, well, this is the same, or there's definitely like lines and differences between what is horror for adults and what is horror for young adults besides the age of the protagonist. Like, I don't really know.
Yeah, I think, I mean, at a certain point, all genre is just marketing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just for
like,
sure.
You're just like, oh, well, this, people will know what it is roughly before they get into it. And you're like, oh, well, I like that. And I'll make you buy it because you like things that are similar. And mm-hmm. I get that. It's just like, should I be just should I just be writing young adult horror? Will I make sell more copies of my books if they're like, because it says young adult horror? I mean, Merciless is just as gory as anything I write. I don't know, like, people are getting their fingernails ripped off in that book. So
gosh, can I just side note, I walked past the sequel and then the I think there's a sequel and a standalone. I don't think it's a three book series, The Merciless.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, do I want to buy this? And then I went, no, you don't. No, don't do it.
No more fingernails.
I was very close. Like, I had it in my hand and I put it back. I was like, not today.
If I read that, that's just out of kind of morbid curiosity. Like, no, I wanted.
That's where I'm at. And I'm just like, maybe come the Halloween months, we're like, we're diving back into this again.
Spooky times. Yeah. So that was a good tangent that we end the podcast with. Paige, before we go, where can people find your books? Where can they buy the things you've written?
You can find them on Amazon. Yeah. And some other bookstores too. But I mean, Amazon's kind of the big one. Yeah. Amazon.com. Paige Lavoie. Oh, also shout out, because we read The Cruel Prince, to my friend, I think what is her screen name? Taylor Simons on Twitter, and then Taylor on Tour on Instagram. Her and her friends just did a really good Cruel Prince cosplay. Holly Black retweeted them and it was very exciting. They look flippin' incredible and you guys should all check them out and retweet it and give them a like and be like, look at these cuties.
What characters did they do?
They did the Carden, sisters. Carden, and then the sisters, yeah.
Okay. I mean, those are the ones you do, I would imagine, but you know.
Yeah.
I'm curious, like, if you're choosing some of the characters, you're like, that's a lot of horns and fur and tails and all that. That's a lot of extra, you know. It's much easier just to be a human than it is be one of the creatures. Some of those fairy creatures with like wings and all that stuff. So I'll have a link to Paige's author page on Amazon on the show notes, so you can go click on that and buy things from her. You should buy her books. I think you should, you know, support artists. It's an important thing to do. I think that'll do it for us. Paige, thank you for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Paige for joining me. You can find me on Twitter at Robbie Norman, and my website is robbienorman.com. You'll find links there for my other podcasts and for my debut horror novel, Conquest, available now on Amazon. The show's website is CyrilFanaticist.com, and you can follow our Facebook page at facebook.com/CyrilFanaticist. If you like the show, please give it a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. Tell your friends, subscribe. All those things help. I really do appreciate it. Until next time, thanks for being a fan.